Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Retreat series, Dhamma Talk number 21. The current segment or topics we are discussing is appamada, heedfulness. And we are practicing Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, mindfulness insight meditation. And if you are practicing mindfulness insight meditation, you actually are practicing Noble Eightfold Path. Okay? And if that is so, it is 100% certainty that you are heedful. Okay? Practicing this is you are in a totally heedful mode. This heedfulness or heedlessness we discussed last week. The Buddha just talked to us just appamada, heedful, be heedful. The rest of your life be heedful. That's the most important thing, to be heedful. By being heedful, the least benefit you can get is you are getting kusala. Say wholesome karma, you're getting it. And if it carries on, you have peace and happiness, you have wisdom, intelligence, and eventually up to the point of Nibbana, the highest bliss. And that's all on heedfulness. And in Buddhism, there are many words, very choices, many variations comes in. Mindfulness, heedfulness, okay, precepts, and so on. But they are all related one to the other. Okay, they are all related. They are all connected. These Dhamma are all connected. The Buddha simply talked in a various ways so that it could touch various different kind of mind and personality. But everything is it's totally dependent, and focal point is about arising and passing away of all mind and matter. Okay? The Dhamma, which is arising and passing away of mind and matter, that is the key condition. Based on that condition, the Buddha taught us in many ways to understand that. When you fully understand that, then the path to happiness, peace, and bliss is assured. So in here, appamada, be heedful. When Buddhists thought, it is simply be heedful. And of course, the whole spectrum. He didn't divide it this way, or this level, or that level. But he talks and he talks and talks. And as you all know, we are practicing the Theravada Buddhism, which means in 2,500 years since the Buddha passed away, there are many elders, great elders, came and they expand, they expound, they explain so that we could understand in many ways. You can even say like spoon feeding. Some people, just a word, they understood the whole thing. Some people, a phrase, they understood. Some people, you have to talk in many different ways. Some people, you have to even draw. Okay? pictures and diagrams shows accurately, pointed the finger to the river, to the stones, to the logs, because we all have different intelligence level. So the elders show us this apamada, okay, in the three different levels. Okay, three different levels. In the scripture, they're starting to show and taught us so that each of us or a group of us can be heedful at the level where we can. Not everybody can go right to the top. Not everybody can climb to the top to reach the top of Mount Everest. We all do with our own capacity, with our own interest, and with our own condition. So in here you can say this heedfulness for us to be able to do at the level where we can, the best that we can, divide it and do three different categories or levels. The first one we can call is the gross form of heedfulness. Okay, the basic, the gross. What you at least you have to have this heedfulness, gross form. The simplest way is to put it in the way we could understand very easily is five precepts. We all know five precepts. And if you observe five precepts, if you avoid, okay, all these five precepts that transgress, that hurts and harm other people, if you can avoid it, if you can observe it, in other words, that means you are heedful, apamada. But if you break them, then it is heedless. If you break them, it is heedless. And at the same time, we cannot be perfect. Not everybody can be perfect. Sometime you break something, you break one of the precepts. Maybe it is out of negligence, or maybe it is out of misunderstanding, or maybe simply just callous. You break it, or you broke it. If you broke it, still fine. If you become aware of it, after the fact that become aware of it, and then you enforce yourself, I'm going to make very sure, absolutely sure, I will not do this again. Good. If that's the case, you are still in the mode of apamada. And you break it carelessly, callously, and you don't even aware of it, totally forgetful and negligent, and leave it as that, and then you don't really care to remedy it, to correct it. And if that's the case, even though you are trying to be observing these five precepts with that kind of attitude, you fall into pamada, you become heedless. That's very simple. It's about avoiding things that one should not commit, and observing things or doing things, carry out things that one needs to. What is that? To be helpful, to be kind, to be not hurtful and harmful to your environment. That's all about pamada and apamada. Heedless and heedful. Just living by that way, that is the fundamental level one need to be heedful or gross. I think G-R-O-S-S, gross form of heedfulness. That's we just do with the five precepts. But again, the elders in the scripture divided these into, first of all, is the three actions, dusarita, three habits that hurts and harm that produced destruction and corrupt nature. The three, what are these three? These three can be either black or white. What it is physical action. Physically, you hurt and harm others. Verbally, you hurt and harm others. Mentally, you hurt and harm others. Three. Okay. Three dusarita, suffering producing, hurt producing habits. And then the same thing, we can say that three dusarita. Dusarita is happiness producing, peace producing. What are they? The same thing. Physical actions, mental actions, and verbal actions. But these actions are directing towards the path of producing peace, happiness, and harmony. The same three actions. Dusarita, suffering or stress producing actions. Dusarita, peace, happiness, and harmony producing actions. Those are the basic fundamental. And in here is, if you are heedless, you are practicing these three suffering and stress producing actions. One must avoid it. And in the scripture, this is three in general, but they break it down into 10. Okay, you all had heard last week. In the physical actions, suffering producing actions of what? Killing living beings, taking what is not given, and then sexual misconduct. Those are the three, physical. And then verbal, what are they? Lying, okay, rude and harsh words, slanders and frivolous talk. Those are the four verbal actions. And three mental actions. One is covetousness, abhijja. Next one is ill will, vyabhada. And the third one is ditthi, mecha ditthi, wrong view. So they split down into 10. Okay, three in detail. Three is more like an arm waving. You have to make your own common sense. So for those people who doesn't know how to, the elders have showed us 10 different ways. Three in physical, four in verbal, and three in mental. 10 of them. And if you are observing not to break them, then you are heedful, apamada. But if you break them out of negligence, out of ignorance, and don't even care to remedy it or have any remorse about it, then you are in apamada. We talk about it in detail, these 10 last Dharma talk, so we won't go back. So that falls into the gross form of heedfulness. If you avoid them, you are heedful. If you commit them, if you do them, you become heedless. Heedful and heedless. At least that's the minimum we need to be do. And if we are heedful about it, it is said that you are a real, true human being. If you cannot, you are not much different than the animals. That's the distinction between the animals and humans. So even though we might be having a human form, if we are behaving like animals, your mental state, so you are more of an animals-like person rather than the true human being. So keep in mind to observe it. If you break it, it's okay. Once in a while, if you break it. But be conscious about it, be aware about it, and be resolute, or try to put yourself to remedy it so that it won't happen. In that way, you are always in the mode of heedfulness. That's the base. Let's now call it a medium level. Okay, medium level of heedfulness. In other words, step up. Some people, they want to be even better than that. If you are want to be better than that, that medium form of heedfulness is all, okay, revolved around the word karma guna. Okay, karma guna. Of course, every one of you have heard the word karma chanda. Okay, karma chanda, need or not, five hindrances. Karma is senses, chanda is desire, sense desire. These are the what obstacles or that hinders your meditation progress. But in here, step up, it combination is, it combines with a different word, not karma and chanda. It's called karma and guna. Karma is all the senses. We all know this. Okay? Senses through your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, all these senses. Karma means all these five senses that we are always engaging in. Guna means that binds, of which binds, binding, tying up, changed. Okay. It changed you, it binds you, it tied you down. These five senses will change you down, it binds you down with them, and it ties you down. Karma guna. Okay. That is the point, the key words in this medium form of heedfulness. So in here, if you look at it, these senses, we are all engaging it all the time. We are all engaging it. The senses in terms of beautiful forms, lovely forms. We like it. And then beautiful and lovely sounds. We love it. We enjoyed it. We have our favorite song, favorite tunes. The same thing, the smell. Oh, I like jasmine, I like lavender. So much so you like this lavender, you have to have a lavender soap, you have to have a lavender oil, you have to have a lavender plant. All the products that made with lavender, you will go look for it, search for it, and use it. You see? That's in time of sense. And then the taste too. Okay? The taste that you love and enjoy, and also the touch, whether the touch of a cotton or the touch of a silk or the touch of a rayon material and so on. These are the all the materials that related with these five senses. Materials related with these five senses, or you can saw objects that related with these five senses. So these are called karma vittu. Okay. Yeah. Karma is the senses, vittu is the object material. Karma vittu. Or they call it, translated as objective defilements. These are called objective defilement. And of course, these are simply the object that exists. Okay. Beautiful roses or nice jasmine smell. They just exist in the world. They bear their own nature. They bear their own character. But there's another one by itself. They are nothing. it neither good nor bad or whatsoever. Another one is the living beings. Living beings, when they come in contact with them, okay, they like it or they don't like it. I like rose. I like jasmine. Oh, I really like the magnolia, but I'm allergic to it. I can't stand it. And so on. What is that? That is the desire. The desire. And this desire is karma kilesa. You can call it karma kilesa. Karma kilesa or subjective defilement. All the objects are called objective defilement, and this one is called subjective defilement. Or karma tanha. You can call it karma tanha as well. So karma vittu, the object, karma tanha, the desire itself. Objective defilement, subjective defilement. When these two are together, when those two work together jointly, at that moment, that is the karma guna. So under karma guna, there are two. When those two work together, connected, then there is the karma guna. Sense desire that will bind you, change you, bound you down with it. Depending on to what level you become, okay, eventually even to the point of you become the slave of the desire, up to that level it can take you. Kama guna, kama vittu, and the kama kilesa or kama dana, the desire that you have for these things. And when you have these things, just natural, we all are, everybody, we live in this world, we always look for something that we like, that we love, that we desire, and we always avoid, that we don't like, that we hate, that we are repulsive about, and we avoid them. That is the natural instance. Natural response. That's all how the living beings are. We live with that, we are born with it, we live with it. Not only this life, for many, many past life, we come with it, and it becomes automatically a genetic habit in it, in us. That is how we behave and act. You might be quite strong, determined about observing the gross form of heedfulness. But if you become the slave of this karma guna, what happens is automatically you break down. This one, even though it is the milder form, medium form, if one do not observe it, one do not watch it, it will grow and it will grow and it will grow, and it can even break down the first level, the gross form of heedfulness. So don't think they are small. Don't think they are. No. You might be very strong and tough, determined how to do what to do. You have a system, the way you live, very strict, straightforward, virtuous. But you come into something, you get involved into a certain sense, a sense of touch. Okay. Won't go into the details, but you can expand your mind. Just from the sense of touch, you have the pleasure in that sense of touch. And the sense of touch, the pleasure is so much, you become habituated into it. You feel comfort to be with it, comfortable. You don't think that you are, but you feel comfortable, just a craving. That craving, with But the comfort, you don't observe it, you let it go. You let the senses run freely. In other words, you don't have a check and balance on these senses, this particular case on senses. You become very familiar, you become very comfortable. You crave for it, but you're not even aware of it. Oh, it's okay. And before you know it, you become the prisoner of it. What it is, upadana, the clinging and attachment arises. Clinging, grasping, attachment arises. At that moment, you can call it more or less like an addiction. Not you can call it not 100%, but it's addiction. You just love it. When you don't have it, you miss it. That's called upadana. Clinging, attachment, grasping. You got to that level. When you got to that level, previously whatever you have committed, whatever you are resolved, how I'm going to live, what I'm going to do, they start breaking down. And of course you rationalize in many ways to absolve yourself. It is all about self-absorption and self-forgiveness. That is how this karma guna has effect upon one. Whether it is the touch or smell or sound, whatever that is, and slowly take you away. And if that's the case, you are in the mode of pamada, you become heedless. That heedlessness in the medium form doesn't stay there. It takes you down to the lower level, to the grosser form, and even break the format of grosser form that you can so well observe. Still not. So that is very important factor we need to know. Because this karma guna, okay, these sense pleasures, or the sense object and the subjective defilements and objective defilement, these two. If you are there, you have something. What is that something? That something is called karma sukha, the pleasure of these senses. Okay? That is nothing, that is their nature. These objects give you pleasure. These objects gives you pleasure. It's called karma sukha. When you have these things, you are happy. You are in a very comfortable mode. You are not stressed out. You are not disturbed. You are singing and whistling. You just move around smiling at everybody, talk in a pleasant way. What is that? That is, you are enjoying the karma sukha, the pleasure or the happiness that gives from the pleasure of these senses, karma, sukha. So we enjoyed it, we live with it, and in fact, most of us, most of the human race, that is what we are looking for in our life. We have a hard walk, we have a hard business, ups and downs and so on, success and failure. But we are looking for that little pleasure, karma sukha. And whenever we have that, wow, thank God I have a break. And you live on. And you look for it, you walk for it, you look for it. And you walk, you look, you plan, you fight. For what? Most of us all the time is for that sense pleasure, karma sukha. Okay. We fight so much we don't even have enough time. All the time we have is not enough to have that sense pleasure, karma sukha. This karma senses give you pleasure, give you happiness. And most of us don't even have enough time to do, to work for it. That means you become a slave. Without knowing, you think you are in a totally break, you are in a vacation. You are free. That's how you felt. That's karma sukha. So this is, we need to know these things very clearly. Okay? Karma guna, karma vittu, karma dana, and then karma sukha. We live on it. Fine, that's nothing wrong with it. As long as you don't hurt anybody, you don't harm anybody. As long as you are enjoying the pleasure that is lawfully, morally, ethically yours, fine, you are not hurting anybody and anybody, everybody. But do not use or transgress things that belongs to other people. Okay? Don't go and enjoy these pleasures, sukha, on materials and things and beings that is not yours, that doesn't belong to you, that is not lawfully, morally, or ethically. If that's the case, still at that level you can say you are heedful. That is, you go back to the grosser form of heedfulness. But in here, what do you have to do? What you have to do is, as long as you are enjoying these karma sukha, you think, this is it, this is what life for. Okay, that's what to work for myself, for my family, for my relatives, and so on and so on. But there's one thing, okay, most of the people don't know. That is not all about the peace and happiness and pleasure of life. There's another kind of happiness or pleasure or peace, another kind. Okay, that kind is, we call it nikama sukha. The first one is kama sukha that we all know and we all fight and we all work for. The next one is nikama sukha, the pleasure or the happiness of renunciation, nikama sukha. And here is nikama sukha parigaha. Okay. One has to become the possessor, the owner of this pleasure of renunciation. But there is a catch there. If you want this nikama sukha, the bliss or the happiness and pleasure of this renunciation, one must abandon the karma sukha. If you do not, if you cannot abandon the karma sukha, you cannot have the nikama sukha, because they are not compatible. They are like fire and water. As long as you have this karma sukha, you cannot have this nikama sukha. If you want nikama sukha, you must abandon or you must renounce this karma sukha. On an absolute level, on a relative level, of course, you make your own decision based on your own wants and your life condition. They are in conflict. This nikama sukha is, to put a few things to see it, we all know jhana, okay? Jhana sukha is one of the pleasure, and also bhikkhu sukha, the pleasure or happiness of being a bhikkhu, a monk. I'm not just talking about shave the hair and put the robe on, actually living in full force like and is a bhikkhu, with all the vinaya and with all the practice. The key thing is practice. And if you live like that, there's a certain pleasure in it. That is bhikkhu sukha. And there's another sukha. It's called vipassana sukha. When you got to the higher level of insight, there's a different kind of, you can call it pleasure, you can call it happiness, you can call it peace or bliss, whatever you like to call it, fine. But it is not this gross form of karma sukha, not like the sense pleasure. Totally different, higher than that, superior than that. Vipassana sukha in the higher level. And of course we all know the supreme bliss, also supreme peace and happiness, nibbana sukha. All those things are called, okay, nikama sukha, pleasure of renunciation. What do you renounce? You renounce the sense pleasure. That is where you go. So only when you renounce the sense pleasure, you can have it. You become the owner of these kind of nekama sukha, the pleasure or happiness of renunciation, such as jhana, vipassana, bhikkhu, and nibbana. And if you want to go path and fruition and so on, all these things. So that's a different kind, that kind of sukha exists. So if you want to have that kind of sukha, one must renounce this kama sukha. So in here, kama sukha, what is that kama sukha? It is the pleasure of the sight, the pleasure of the sound, the pleasure of the smell, the pleasure of the taste, the pleasure of the touch. Those are the things. Of course, we cannot go cold turkey, chop it off and done. No, we can. What you do was, while we are living on a daily basis, every day, on every moment, you restrain. Okay? These things come in. Automatically, we are face to face with all these senses all the time. When they come in, you don't let yourself go free and fly on these senses. You put a restraint in these things. Just to give an example, you see, I'll use the monks. And even some of you are aware of notice. When you look at it, okay, in our world normally you just stare at people, look at people, oh, who is it, how is it, what is wearing, white eyes. And when you're restrained of senses, you only always keep your eyes half open or half closed, whatever you want to call it. When you are there, you are not in contact with the object of the beautiful object, the pleasurable object. When you don't see it, okay, the object is there, the desire doesn't arise. The desire, subjective defilement cannot arise. There you are. And of course, when it is necessary, open your eyes, look at it, deal with it, do what you need to do. And after that, there is the restraint. Just giving you one example in terms of sight. The same thing with sound, the same thing with smell. We can go on and on. But in other words, all the five senses, we are always in contact with it all the time. And in here, you use your own intelligence and put a restraint on it. Okay? Not being exposed. You don't expose yourself to them is the best way to. But at the same time, you are not shutting down from the world. Whenever you are in common contact, you just deal with it, look at it, listen to it. So these looking at it, beautiful object, ugly object, listening to beautiful sound, ugly sound, they are all the same to everybody. All the same to everybody. And in here, if you look at it, if you listen to it, and if you let your mind go freely, in other words, you engage with it, you enjoy it, you love it, in other words, engage, you crave for it, you get into the pleasure of it, the pleasure of the sight, the pleasure of the sound, you become, you get mixed and involved into the pleasure, then automatically that means you are enjoying the kama sukha. Kama sukha, you are enjoying it. Okay. If you are enjoying it, kama sukha, in other words, that is kama tanha, the craving. The craving arises, and then what? Badana, grasping, clinging, attachment will arise, and so on and so on. That's a trend it took. Another one is, you still see beautiful thing is beautiful thing. You see, we are face to face, you still see it, face to face, you still hear it. At that moment, be aware that you are seeing a beautiful thing. Be aware that you are hearing a beautiful sound. That beautiful thing and beautiful sound is exactly the same with everybody who is totally, thoroughly enjoying it, and also you that you are with full awareness. The experience is the same. The beauty doesn't diminish. The loveliness of the sound doesn't diminish. The only difference is people who are heedless, they just flow into it. The tanha, craving, flow like water in a stream, endlessly, uninterruptedly, all connected as one. That's what it is when you are, when you don't have heedfulness, when you are heedless, that's what it becomes. The beauty is the same, the loveliness is the same. But when you are aware that you are seeing, that you are seeing the beautiful thing, that you are smelling the beautiful thing, that you are tasting the beautiful food and taste, the quality of the taste, the quality of the sound, the quality of the beauty of a form doesn't diminish. In fact, it even more pronounced and prominent because there's a full awareness. But one thing was, you are acutely aware of it. You experience it exactly like the one who is heedless. But if you are heedful, everything the same except one, what is that? You do not have craving tanha. That's a different. You hear that? Avijja, vedana, pichya, tanha. Vedana is that experience of these beautiful things, pleasant form, pleasant sound, pleasant smell. Pichya, that is the condition, that's the cause. Because of it, due to it, you have the tanha, craving. Vedana, pichya, tanha. That's what's happening for the most of the people. It flows into the stream, into the river of tanha, into the river of craving. But when you are acutely aware of it, suddenly, vedana, pichya, there's no tanha, because you do not crave for it, because you know exactly that vedana, pleasant feeling, is simply as pleasant feeling. And the experience is exactly the same. It doesn't diminish. Taste good is taste good. Chocolate is still chocolately good. Ice cream is ice creamly good. Nothing changed. But you enjoyed it. You taste it. You enjoy as it really is. But you have no craving for it. In other words, when it is finished, it is like as if it never exists. So, you cannot say vedana, pichya, tanha. Due to the pleasant sensation, craving arises. So what do you say? Vedana, pichya, pinya. Or you can say vedana, pichya, sati and pinya. Instead of craving in that spot, what does it replace with? It replaced with sati, mindfulness, and pinya, wisdom. Because of that mindfulness, because of the wisdom, you do not flow into the stream of craving. So, feeling doesn't give rise to craving. Feeling gives rise to mindfulness and wisdom. That's it. At that moment, you don't flow into that stream. At that moment, okay, this objective defilement, the object, the pleasurable object, is in contact, but subjective defilement cannot arise. In that place, the wisdom arises, and that's how it cut off. When it cuts off, you don't go into the Kama Sukha. You are not flowing and enjoying into this sense pleasure. What did you do? You cut it off. In other words, you renounce it. At the moment of renunciation, you gain wisdom. And that leads you to the another kind of happiness and peace. Nekama Sukha. That one little moment, simply being aware of the moment that you are enjoying, if it is something enjoying. And also the moment that you something you don't like at all. Don't like at all is don't like at all. You cannot make yourself to like the smell of a skunk. Okay? You cannot make yourself to like the smell of a skunk. You don't like, you don't like. The only thing is you experience the skunk smell exactly like everybody. It is repulsive, unlikable. But at that moment, there's no anger arises, no dissatisfaction arises. You simply know it is stink. What would you do? You will close the window, you will close the door, you will change direction to be away from that unpleasant nature. But not out of anger, not out of dissatisfaction or aversion. Simply, this is the unsuitable environment and you change the environment. That's the difference, and that is wisdom. Whether you are doing, avoiding the stinking smell with anger, with aversion, or whether you are avoiding it without anger, without aversion, because it is a suitable thing to do away from it. There's a lot of toxin into it. That is doing with wisdom. The other one is doing with anger. That's a different. That is Nekama Sukha. Okay. The happiness and peace of renunciation. So in here, if you look at it, when you have some beautiful thing, beautiful smell, you flow into it, into the stream of Tanha. That is one extreme. The Buddhas taught us not to be in this one extreme or the other extreme. Always be in the middle, the balanced state. When you flow into the stream of Tanha, you go into one extreme. And when you go into this repulsiveness and anger, okay, or even self-torture, okay, making yourself suffer, that is another extreme. Let's say you want to show how tough you are. You still say, oh, bad smell. Oh, no big deal, I can smell it. You keep on breathing for another 4 minutes. Oh, everybody look, wow, this guy is tough. And in reality, that person is torturing himself, breathing more toxin and smell and suffering himself for another 3 more minutes. That is another extreme, self-torture. Self-torture doesn't mean you have to sleep on the iron beds or poke with iron stick through your faces and mouth and beat yourself up. Of course, that's the obvious one. This one is making a danger to your body and to your mind unnecessarily. That is torturing yourself, the another extreme. Okay, one is you flow into the dana, another one was you show how tough guy you are, and at the expense of some suffering, you still stood on it. That means another extreme. And right here in the middle, you still smell the lovely smell. You still eat the lovely taste food. You still listen to the lovely sound. But one thing was, you don't flow into it. You experienced it as it is, as a beautiful picture, a beautiful smell, a beautiful taste. You experience this like anybody else, but you do not have craving. You know them as it is. To make it in other words, they arise, you experience, and it doesn't last. It disappears, arising and passing away. The Dharma of arising and passing away. At that moment, you are neither on the one extreme of pleasure or whether another extreme, which is suffering and torturing your body. You are in the, totally in a state of balance. You do with full wisdom. At the same time, you don't deprive. I have to deprive. No. All is acutely aware of the moment, of the object, of this sense object, objective defilement, with full awareness, and you are in the middle part already. That is how one lives. That is how one can put restraint. Right in the middle of the world, all of us here, we have a work, or we have family, or we have properties, and so on and so forth. Okay, we can't avoid it. All the senses, all there. If you can, okay, as an example, it's called prevention. Keep your eyes half closed. You see, you have less things to contend with. And so on and so on. But if you're not, if you're facing all the time, simply be acutely aware of it. And by being acutely aware, you are right on the middle path. You experience it, you don't deprive yourself, but at the same time, you don't have any craving or attachment together with it. That's the way to go. And if you can live that way, with restraint to the sense pleasure, with acute awareness to the sense pleasure, then you have the heedfulness in the apamada, in the middle path. Basically, restraint, 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 restraint to all sense pleasure. Restraints have a negative connotation. You don't like the word restraint? I'll give you another word. Contentment. Be content with what you have. Be content with what you have. Not even in a daily life, even in a retreat, there's a food come in. You are a grown up in a Western environment. You don't like Asian food. You grew up from Asia. You don't like Western food. Cheese and blue cheese, ah, yuck. Oh, all these fish paste and chili, ah, yuck. It's there because the retreat cannot cook everything and anything that can satisfy everybody. At that moment, whatever is in front of you, take it with contentment. If you take it with contentment, you will have no problem. You are already on the middle path. You don't have an aversion towards it. You don't have a liking, craving for it, or yearning for it. Complaint. What is complaint? Complaint is dissatisfaction. You are not content. When you are not content, you complain about it. So, if you don't like the word restraint, be content. Especially the monks, the Buddha said, be content with whatever food you are being given by the people. One day you might get only apples. The whole bowl full is apple, then so be it. One day you might get all meat, so be it. One day you might get all assorted food, and so be it. Be content with what you receive, what you have, what you get. And by being content, that is the key to the happiness, happiness of renunciation. You renounce what you like and what you don't like, and you are content with what is in front of you. Be content. By being content, you really take care of the medium form of heedfulness. So may all of you be able to practice and be with heedfulness in a gross form or in a medium form, and may you be able to experience the peace and happiness of renunciation all the time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's share a merit. Imaya dhammanu dhammapati patiya buddham bujemi. Imaya dhammanu dhammapati patiya dhammam bujemi. Imaya dhammanu dhammapati patiya sangham bujemi. Adda imaya patipatiya jara maranamma primo jaisami idame punya atvakya vaham hotu idame silam megapalanyanasa picheo hotu imano punya bhagam sabba sadanam dema sabbe sada sukhita hontu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bujemi. Dhammam bujemi. Sangham bujemi. Thank you very much.